The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on April 12, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all today. Well, about a month ago here, I gave a talk on a Sunday morning, my last talk, and I opened with the statement that I don't believe God exists. And I think that kind of triggered some responses, because I got a couple letters and emails and people stopping me and talking to me about that. But I think what was missed was that I also said I don't believe that God does not exist. And that was sort of the point I was making, that it's neither is nor is not, at least with my understanding. And I think that is what we find in Buddhist teachings as well. We get this from Nagarjuna. Well, more than that, the tetralemma, not just this duality of is and is not. We don't say is, can't say is. Well, we can say it, but can't really say is, can't say is not. You can't say both, is and is not, and you can't say neither. So what can we say? And what are we talking about even? Were I to say that I don't believe that God exists, and I don't believe that God does not exist. The point there is, well, in my case at least, I have no idea what we're talking about. This is why I don't hold these beliefs. I don't know what you mean by God. I myself have long ago dropped any attempt to even define that. It was certainly given to me when I was in church as a little boy, raised in a Christian church. Maybe I puzzled about it then to some degree. What are we talking about? And depending on who you talk to, you're going to get different ideas, definitions. And no, but God does not exist. As if, okay, do you know what you're talking about, though? What does not exist that you're speaking of here? How often do we go that far? Just take that extra little step there and look at this. What are you talking about? Of course, we're talking about belief. And belief is what? Well, belief is some idea that we're holding that we think is true. But what is exactly the subject of that belief, the object? What is taking place there? Does this make any sense to you? Well, pretty soon, though, we're forming our different ideas. Some people believe this, some believe that. And pretty soon, we might begin to argue about it and fight about it. And we think, well, no, but your belief is crazy or wrong or bad or evil. I think some of the responses I was getting, it wasn't expressed directly, but in a couple of cases, it was like there's some concern for my well-being, that if I don't believe God exists, I'm going to go to hell. Something on that order. That wasn't explicitly stated, but it was sort of, it seemed like it was in the background of the thinking of the person who wrote the letter. But what's going on? Do we really know what we're talking about here and what our concern is? And what the truth is? And is truth reality? Is this something we can get and hold in our hands? What we get and hold in our hands are ideas, beliefs. We can develop all kinds of justifications for it, whatever it is we're holding, particularly that particular belief in God. And as I said, we'll fight over it, try to get power over others. You can't have your religion here, and And now ours, we want ours to be taught in schools, and you know, because this is right and correct, and others find that that would be terrible. Just grounds for squabbling, fighting. Is there any rest in this? Is there any foundation to it? Can any of you show us the foundation for such a view that it could hold up? If it were true and real, it should be unquestionable. Well, maybe we can question it for a time, but sooner or later, it would seem that one or the other of these views, if any of them are correct, would hold up. And yet we will fight to the death over things like this. We will go to wars over things like this. And not just beliefs like that, but just the idea of even getting power, getting control. Right now we're living in times in the world where this is really beginning to show itself for what it is, or what it can involve, what it can bring up in us. And of course we would say, well, yeah, but we need laws and rules, and somebody needs to be in charge and in control and all of this. Yeah. Yeah, we do need some rules, perhaps, to live in a society. Wouldn't we want to make them work toward helping us to maybe settle down a little bit and learn to get along and not fight with each other? And even if you do hold some belief tightly and you think that everyone else is going to go to hell because they don't believe what you believe, well, do you have to rush out there and try to make everything go your way and get them to, you know? And if you want to do that, I mean, aren't there different, maybe more peaceful ways of doing it? Have some good discussions. Maybe we can watch ourselves, watch our own minds, watch our own thinking to see if we can maybe be open to another view, or maybe draw some doubt into our own thinking so we can examine our thinking and what it is that we believe. But do we give ourselves a chance for this? Just was it yesterday or the day before? I got this little flyer in the mail, and it was, I don't know if it was sponsored by the University of Minnesota or whatever. I get these once in a while. I used to work there, and I get these little things. And this was about a trip we could take to Bhutan. Beautiful pictures. I'd love to see Bhutan. and take a trip together to Bhutan. And in that flyer there, I was reminded of, yeah, the Bhutan, they talk about, well, we talk about our gross national product, right? Isn't that gross? GNP, right? Gross national product, yeah. Well, Bhutan, and I remember this some years ago when pressure was being put on them to modernize and get with it and all of that, determine what your GNP is and that sort of thing. Anyway, they came up with for them, the concern is their gross national happiness. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right away. You like that. Probably everybody does. Happiness. Now, what about that? Do we see that when we're fighting with each other about this or that? And what is that saying about us? Or you're the wealthy, wealthy business person, and yet much of your wealth that you're accumulating for yourself, you have a lot of workers out there who are just barely scraping by. Are you a happy man, woman, if you're living like this? You're accumulating all of this, and does that make you happy, all these things you have now? And do you ever give your attention to how many others might be suffering directly because you're hoarding this wealth? Does a happy person do that? Do we ever ask ourselves questions like this? Teach these kinds of things in our schools. Teach what? Well, to have us look at stuff like this from time to time and ask ourselves some questions about it. Well, here we have this little country of Bhutan. And when they were approached with the idea that, yeah, well, you got to determine your gross national product and all this kind of stuff, because we're supposed to find our happiness through the accumulation of wealth. Does it come from that? We've had studies that show, like, well, as long as you're not in dire poverty and this sort of thing, once you get to a certain level of affluence, it's fairly modest. Your happiness doesn't really increase any. Not from the accumulation of wealth. In fact, I would say it makes your life more miserable. All the things you have to be thinking of and taking care of, even getting caught up in the fact that somebody else now has just about the same kind of wealth. You want to be number 7 on the list. Somebody else beats you out. Now what do? You deprive your workers of more? I mean, this is the world that we're in, and many of us, whether we're super wealthy like that or not, but with our countries, our wars, or this and that and one thing, just on and on and on in the way we interact with each other. Here's where the thinking and the motives is. We teach ourselves that, if I had more money, I'd be happier. Well, is that true? Do you examine that? But we don't. We're not given to study this or to think about this so much, because I think if we did, we would begin to notice there's something off here. And there's no rest in it. And coupling together with bringing together with ideas about something like God and an afterlife, or does it all end here? Or does it go on? Big question marks here, everywhere. Are you happy? Does the way we're living here, are we constructing a society here that engenders happiness in us? And some understanding? But I would say that as soon as you take hold of something, like, say, that belief in God, begin to notice that nobody has it pinned down. Yeah, you've really taken this on. You really believe this. Maybe you really do. But look at it. Look at how entwined this is with all kinds of human misery and misunderstandings and hatreds and worry. I might make it to some, glorious place. But my loved ones, will they? And what do I do? Do I work on them to get? It's endless. Or in the area of money making and all of this. And again, we need laws, we need regulations, we need leaders. But can we find any enlightened leaders? But we need this to get along with each other in our communities and our cultures and things. But this matter of morality, getting back to these concerns that were expressed to me after I made this statement a month ago, that I don't hold a belief in God because I really don't have any idea what we're talking about. Truly don't know. This is kind of where Buddhist teachings are. Now, of course, we can take a system like, say, Buddhism, which isn't just a simple system, it's a whole bunch of different things. And different beliefs can form about this and that, and then we get different schools and different ideas going there. But every one of these, there's some grasping going on there. taking hold of certain views and then arguing about it and saying, well, this is what the Buddha said and this is what he meant. And this is why I love Nagarjuna so much, because he examines all of this stuff. 2,000 years ago, almost 2,000. But he was really examining all this stuff. And I struck my heart early on. I first ran into this guy when I was in my 20s, and there was something different about this. And I've been looking at him and thinking about what he's pointed out ever since. Well, by the time I was in my 30s, I started to really see what he was pointing out. And I would say that where this is going with what he's pointing to there, it isn't a particular thing. It gets a name, you know, Majjhimaka Buddhism or, you know, Majjhimaka school or whatever. Yeah, because we'll do that when we grasp it. And then we have the scholars who will grasp this that Nagarjuna said or wrote down, you know, and others would translate it this way or that way. And so I'm working on a book right now. I'm trying to clarify, really examine what Nagarjuna is laying out there for us and see if maybe I can clarify it a bit. But the point I'm trying to make here now, that he does this, and this is what's so difficult about it, he does this without laying down, this is it, or that's it, or this is right, and this is where you should go. He never does that. He just shows what you do when you do that. And this brings us right back to what it was that the Buddha taught, what it was that the Buddha saw. And yet, again, when we take it up with our ordinary minds, we will turn it into some formed kind of teaching or a belief or something like this, and it can unfold in different ways. Buddhists in general, I think, do kind of get along with each of the various schools and traditions and things, because that is behind where much of this is coming from. But even there, though, there can be differences. And we might want to quarrel with each other if we're not careful. This can happen. But here we have this little country of Bhutan, which has kind of been, for centuries now, been soaking in this teaching, this way of practice, looking at, and their concern is with happiness. Because happiness will be there with just an opening up to just this. And not saying it's a particular way or insisting that it is a particular way, that it has to be a particular way. And that other particular way that you're pointing to, there's no need to go there. Because look at the human world as we find it. Is there any rest anywhere? Has anybody really ever settled anything out here? No. It's like one continuous squabble and difficulty. We come into this as little children, and depending on how the life circumstances might hit us, and you know, what order, and any number of other things, and we get tossed about and tossed about and tossed about. And it's very difficult for us to really find a peaceful mind here, to experience actual happiness. Again, the wealthy man, it makes him happy that he can buy this and that. Is that actually happiness? Is that a happy man? The conqueror in war, is that a happy man? The feeling in individuals that you need to become something like that to have that kind of power or wealth or whatever. But even at smaller scales, you know, to be the, I don't know, lead person in your company, your outfit, your whatever. Any of the, it's just on and on. If we just look at that one word, happiness, do we find happiness in a life concerned with things this way, that sees things this way. And I would say that, no, this is just this continuous unrest, and you'll never find any way to settle out or have any real true understanding of what this life is. It is only when we let go. And we find this in people who, not just in Buddhists, ancient Buddhist teachers, this is Socrates. We find this in other traditions. And to a person who, he was deemed by the ancient Greeks to be the wisest. Well, that was the oracle at Delphi or something. And you call him the wisest of all men, I guess. Why? Because he knew that he didn't know. This is Socrates. It wasn't like he just crumbled away and died because he didn't know. But he questioned, he looked at it, and people would hold up this or that, and then he would just look at it and question it. And with wisdom, you'll see that nothing gets settled in this way. The term Nagarjuna uses emptiness. We find that this or that is empty of any kind of substantiality, empty of any self-nature. Everything is like this, including you. Just look at that term itself right there, you. What does that refer to when you say I, me? What are you referring to? Like when we say God, we think, we have something. Then we say me. And we carry on as if there's something, solid there that we've gotten a hold of, and we're using this, and we're letting it determine everything in our life. Yes, there is this subjective sense, perhaps, that we as human beings that we have. Some animals do too, I think. Maybe all animals. Maybe trees and flowers, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to say is, I don't want to say is not. I don't believe is or is not in regards to any of this stuff. But this is where we go. And at its very heart, this is what these wise teachers, the Buddha, Nagarjuna, Socrates, and many others, have noted. Otherwise, people too that we've never heard of. This is there for people to find, to wake up to. And yet we can still live a life. We have to. I mean, here we are. I suppose we could try to stop breathing or something, but what's the point of that? Again, but wake up to this, and then now here's total freedom. And is it possible to live this way? And I would say, yes, because people have done this. Of course, Socrates was put to death. There's many things we can discuss now about that, but what's to say in the end? There is this way to wake up and to live out. And a word that goes very well with that, a companion word to that perhaps, is happiness, I would say. And we have this beautiful passage that the Buddha gave us, or so we might think. Did this come from the Buddha? Who's the Buddha? What was the Buddha? We say Gautama. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. That's good. I'm not showing disrespect at all for any of these people. Even the ones now, today, in our own time, giving us so much trouble. I want to respect them and try to understand them and try to help them or others to see the folly, the way that we live. But we don't have to live this way. Here we have this passage where the Buddha speaks of one who's living out of awakeness. And he says, they speak the truth are devoted to the truth, reliable, worthy of confidence. They never knowingly deceive others for the sake of their own advantage. What they have heard here, they do not repeat there, so as to cause dissension there. Thus they unite those that are divided, and those that are united they encourage. Concord gladdens them. They delight and rejoice in concord, and it is concord that they spread by their words. They avoid harsh language and speak such words as are gentle, soothing to the ear, loving, going to the heart, courteous and dear and agreeable to many. They avoid vain talk and speak at the right time in accordance with facts, speak what is useful, speak about right wisdom and right practice. Their speech is like a treasure, at the right moment accompanied by arguments, moderate and full of sense. That's the Buddha. Just pointing to a way that we can live. People such as that, they don't push their way upon others or say that you must follow this or stop what you're doing and practice in this way. Just pointing out that it is possible to live in this way. And I would say that if you're living out of a heart and a mind that sees in this way, to that extent, this is happiness. And you can notice from that place, is it a place? I don't know. I don't know that it's a place, but language maybe makes me say that. But from there, we can really see the moment that we try to bring about some condition or to change somebody in some way that we think would be better for them. And that, right away, we can begin to see the deterioration of this happiness. There's now longing and trying to bring about particular results. And this is not enlightenment. This is not coming from enlightenment. Enlightenment is just simply to open this up and observe and to realize that there are places that if you step in these places, this is pain, this is sorrow, this is suffering and confusion and will bring pain and difficulty and anger and hatred into the world. If we can just learn to open up. So this basis of morality then, and I think again, in my opening statement there, people were concerned that I was living without any kind of moral system because I didn't have a God there or somebody or some entity telling me what to do or giving me the orders, you know, obey this, you know, the commandments, you know, telling him what to do. Yeah. Again, we need orders, we need laws in our society, that sort of thing. But for you as an individual, for me as an individual, they don't work. Laws, rules, orders, they do not work. You will not find a moral system that works. That's why with all the different kind of moral philosophies and things that have been developed in religions, whatever, those that have systems of that order, which provides us with order, they do not work. There's going to be contradictions and there's going to be grounds for arguing and fighting. It doesn't work there. True morality is found right here. It's within your own heart and mind. This is where we need to pay attention. And I'm not saying, you know, because you're wrong, you're bad if you don't. It's just that if you want this peace, this taste of happiness, it's going to be found right here. It's going to be in learning to just not step into places, opening your mouth or taking it into your hands to do this or that. Maybe even without you have ideas about the good you want to do. But just be very careful there. This is where we put the attention. And this is what the Buddha taught. And for him, this word intention is so important. Because if we act out of intention to bring about particular results, this brings pain into the world and confusion, a confused mind. That is not necessary to act. Nature acts all over the place without intention. It doesn't intend to produce the tsunami or anything else. The wonderful day, like we have this incredibly warm day now today. For this time of year, and here in Minnesota, it's pretty good. We're going to get into the 80s, I heard. I don't know. That's pretty good for April. Maybe that's bad for certain people. So again, applying words like that, you have to be very careful. But that's what this teaching and this practice is about, is basically to observe, to watch. And it isn't to follow some rules. So you must do that or you should do that. You should not do that. You don't really find that in the coming from the minds of awakened people. But again, this stuff can get into the writings and the things that get held, and pretty soon different divisions are forming. Yeah, that'll go on. And there isn't, like, I'm trying to preach now in such a way to try to stop that sort of thing. I don't know that I can stop it. I don't know that it needs to stop. But there it is. We live in this kind of a world where people are going to hate each other and fight and that sort of thing. But you yourself, you don't have to live that way. And maybe in not living that way, to the extent that you can not live that way, maybe that'll help someone else to not live that way. Well, that's about it. It is a matter of just paying attention, being here. This is Nagarjuna's book, the Mulapanjamaka Karika. It's 27 chapters of examination of examination of examination of examination of. Just examine what it is that we think or do. And the book I'm working on is sort of just an examination of Nagarjuna. But it is not to come up with, this now is the answer. There isn't any particular answer. This doesn't need to be an answer. If you have an answer, a frozen thing here, it's going to fight with everything else. You need to just see that. And you can find now in your own mind, you don't need to fight with that or anything else for that matter. And yes, this kind of activity is painful. It brings a lot of pain and misery into the world. Yes, yeah. You can point that out. Just point that out. So those people who are doing that, they're bad. Now you've gone too far. And you're just going to contribute to it. So you have to recognize its nature and of a sane life and see if we can just live out of that. And of course, you're going to misstep. It's been quite a while now since I realized that that's what this way is. Nearly 50 years now. And I still step off the path. Not as badly or as far as I used to, that sort of thing. Poor analogy, probably. So it isn't a matter of doing any of this perfectly. I don't know that anyone can do that perfectly. I certainly can't. But it is a matter of knowing what's going to bring misery into the world and into your own life, and the happiness that might be there if you just release that, let go of that. Now take another step, because we can't escape, go somewhere else. We have to take care of this world, this life, moment by moment. But we can do it with a mind that sees and knows freedom. And we can learn to live out of that. No rules there that you're obeying or going by. It's just seeing. Seeing is what is right here. And living accordingly. And very much like in the description here that we have from the Buddha, there are those who speak the truth and never knowingly speak in a way to deceive others, that where the intent is to deceive another. You ask me where where such and such is, and I might tell you because I thought that's where it was. And so you go there and it's not there. It's not then that I deceived you. My intent was not to fool you. My intent was to help you. But I made a mistake. Well, is it a mistake? I just didn't know. Someone else came and took the hammer or whatever it was, and I wasn't aware of that. That goes on. But it's only when somebody intentionally did something. No, you'll feel it, like in your gut or something. Something's a bit off. Yeah, that's what that is. Still, you can be forgiving of that person, but you yourself, this is where you don't try to straighten them out or whatever. You can just point these things out, perhaps. But watch your own doing here. And that word intent that the Buddha used, it really plays into this. Be aware of that. Again, don't judge, don't condemn, don't praise. Just see this and live accordingly. This is called a happy life, I think, where you're actually happy. Maybe I've said enough here, so I'll... Any questions or arguments about anything I say here? You can argue if you want. I can take it. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.